We're all involved in the Nandinama Sutras, which in my imagination comes from Nandinama himself, reflecting opinions of belief and behavior on every aspect of life for all those on the path. The Nandinava's great disciple, Rishi Tirumalar, shows us in the Tirumantram how well he was taught by his guru, and how well he fulfilled his mission by going to South India to revive the monistic theism of Sarvasiddhanta. This vast amount of knowledge in the Tirumantram which digests the Agamas and Vedas and weaves them together in such an astute way indicates a lot of deep meditation, training, yoga practice, and a great spirit, because he actually did what he was sent to do. And we actually have that great treatise today, over 2,200 years later. That shows us an unbroken continuity of what? Intellectual knowledge? No. Of spirit. Spirit of the guru. Hindu temples sustain Hinduism around the world. Scriptures keep us always reminded of the path we're on, the path we're supposed to be on. But only from the Satguru can you get the spirit, the Shakti, the sustaining spirit, to make it all come to life in you, to make the temple meaningful, and to complement the scriptures with your own sight, your own third eye sight. Otherwise, it's just words. Nadas are not on the path of words. The Rishi wandered down from Himalayas to Bangalore. What did he say? Nobody knows. Who did he talk to? Nobody knows. Did he influence crowds of people? He only had to influence one individual. One individual. To speak out to the world at that time, which was to become what we know as the modern world. Kadaswami caught the spirit of the Rishi, who caught the spirit of the previous Rishi, and all the ones that preceded him. And it's that spirit of Sampradaya that makes the traditional teachings meaningful, that gives you the power to discriminate between what is real within those teachings, what is superfluous, or just plain nonsense. Gives you the power to blend Siddhanta with Vedanta, the Vedas with the Agamas. The great Shankaracharya, Shankar, Adi Shankar, preached that Shiva is just absolute quiet and blissful, and just that quiet, pure energy in his Advaita philosophy. Only In his later life, when it was explained to him that except that if the yogi raises his hand, that's the shakti, the movement of that quiet energy. It's that the irreversible spirit of the guru carries through all of the shishya and is basically the only gift the guru can give, is that sustaining spirit. He doesn't have to give knowledge because that's already been written down. He doesn't have to build temples because there are more than enough temples for everybody. The gods can build their own temples, and people can build temples. The others are not following the way of words. Gadait Swami spoke to a lot of people. Who knows what he said? He didn't have any tape recorders. Doubtless he wrote anything down. But his spirit carried through to Chalapa Guru. Who didn't say an awful lot. He wasn't following the way of words. He spoke only of divine essences of the philosophy. Didn't write 3,000 verses like Rishi Tirumalar did. Nor did he give lectures to crowds like Kadai Swami did. His spirit was passed on to Satguru Sivi Yogaswami, who passed his spirit on to a lot of devotees. We must remember that during the time of the British, all gurus had to work very low-key. And that Yogaswami's work, great work, started to flourish after the British left Sri Lanka. He passed his spirit on to lots of devotees. Now, for instance, I myself, if I went to the northern part of Sri Lanka and went to Shiva temples and worshiped there, would I return to America and build a Shiva temple? Maybe yes and maybe no. Would it be a temple like this? Would I have a monastic community? No. Would we have a Shaiva Siddhanta church? No. Would we have a Hinduism today? No. Would we have missions all over the world? No. Would we be sitting here right now? No. Only because of the existence of the one guru, of this venerable line of gurus, that I caught the spirit. And through the spirit, the words manifest, the activities manifest. The devotees maintain that straight path. The disciplines come. The sight comes. After it comes, stays. So today we're thinking about the guru and the purpose of the guru. Without gurus, we don't have temples. Without gurus, we don't have temples and scriptures. Without gurus, we wouldn't have the spirit, and people would stop going to temples and stop reading the scriptures. Maybe they'd begin after in desperation when they wanted something, needed something, and they'd find something within the temples. So the spiritual energies, the Shakti energies, energies which manifest a tiniest part of a second just before you move your arm, energies that manifest microsecond before you have a thought or pronounce a word. That is all the spiritual qualities. Or you don't need a lot of words to transmit the spirit from you to another person. It's just that the shishya, you have to be open and to be kept open. And a little bit of a spirit becomes like a tiny fiber, a tiny thread from the guru to the shishya. Easily broken. And a little bit more of that association becomes another strand of the same thread. Now we have two threads, and then three, then four. Then they're woven together, and finally a string. Is between the guru and the shishya. Then they're woven together and woven together. And finally, a rope. And finally, a rope strong enough to pull a cart. You've seen in India those big, thick ropes that pull a cart. And upon that, the spirit of the Parampara travels. Spirit of the Sampradaya travels. It makes the words that are said go deep. They just don't bounce off the intellect. They go deep into individuals. Spiritual force doesn't just occur. It just doesn't happen. It's a hand-me-down. Just like the human race just didn't happen. It was a hand-me-down of many, many fathers and mothers and many, many incarnations that brought us all here. That's what the Parampara is, a spiritual force that moves from one person to another. Now, this is not talking about something like the modern idea of a Shaktipat where somebody gets a little jolt and pays a little money and then that's it. It's like giving somebody a tiny silk thread and then he's got the thread and you drop your end of it or he drops his end of it and the experience is started and stopped. This is a constant weaving in and out of one fiber and added to another fiber, added to another fiber, added to another fiber, just like this kavi robe is woven. Each fiber attached to another fiber, attached to another fiber, attached to another fiber, and finally we have a thread. And then it's all woven together, and finally we have a firm rope that cannot be pulled apart by two hands or destroyed even by two people pulling against one another. That is Sampradaya. That is Parampara. Nothing more. And as we look at these great line of gurus coming from Lord Shiva himself through Nandi Nala and the countless ones before Nandi Nala, the Tirumalar, the countless rishis to the Rishi of Bangalore, the Gadag Swami, Chalaka Guru, Yoga Swami, we see the same spiritual force flowing. We see an undaunted rare successionship of individuals who consider adversity as a boon from the gods, where all the accumulated karmas to be wiped away have come together in one place to be taken care of all at once. Very efficient. Therefore, the Nadas don't run from adversity, nor do they resent it. They take it within themselves in meditation, deal with it, and dissolve it. in the clear white light within themselves, every tiny little bit of it, and consider it a boon from the gods that it all came at one time rather than to be strung out over a period of many, many years. The mysterious Nathas have their own way of handling almost everything, and much of that will be revealed in the 99 Sutras, which has within it all the knowledge that's within the Catechism and Creed. Knowledge which is in our holy orders. Knowledge which is in our Saiva culture, Brahmachari course, and all the courses we printed throughout the years, summarized in very short little stanzas. Giving codes of behavior, conduct, ways of living, ways of moving, ways of thinking, as well as basic core of the monistic Saiva Siddhanta, taught by our Parampara for eons and eons of time. But today, I want you to think and think through the rest of the day of the spirit of the guru. Suppose you didn't have a guru. You'd be guided by the spirit of your intellect or the spirit of your instinct or the energies of confusion. Guru has only one job, is to keep someone on the right track. So we're not the way of works, we're the way of spiritual unfoldment. And Shishya move from one stage to another in spiritual unfoldment as they progress through the different petals of the higher chakras and come into one or more inner awakenings, one after another. And they're not to settle down in any one or several of the chakras and consider this as a nice life. I like this part of my unfoldment, and so I won't strive further. They can't do that because it is the spirit of the guru that drives them onward. He's constantly thinking and saying, this is not good enough, you can do better. Did the Chalapa guru ever take Yogaswami to sit down and say, okay, now we've done enough, let's just be ordinary? No, he kept walking him around, feeding him, walking him around, feeding him, walking around, feeding him, walking around, feeding him. And then finally, Sadguru Yogaswami is walking around, feeding everybody, walking around, feeding everybody, everybody's doing the same thing, passing on that spiritual quality, which, when we have it, we don't have any problems. We don't have to solve problems. Problems are solved through words when you follow the path of words. Spiritual awakening's there. Problems are solved by lifting consciousness. And the problem goes away. Just automatically goes away. So everyone, every Hindu needs a guru, preceptor, that's as much a part of Hinduism as are the temples, as the Vedas, and even the great scriptures. Because not everyone can see for themselves. They need someone to see ahead a little bit for them and to keep them on the right track and in the right mood. Swami Satchidananda, as I've heard him all through the years in public lectures, make the remark, you all need a spiritual guide. If you don't want me, find somebody else, but you need someone to guide you through life. Grandmother, could be grandfather, could be great uncle, could be your father, could be your mother. Somebody that you listen to and follow. Because of people not having a guide, they're wandering around bumping into each other. They can't see the consequences of their actions, therefore, perform good, bad, and mixed actions, don't keep on the right track, therefore, wandering around in circles. They don't listen to their mothers, they don't listen to their fathers, they don't listen to their aunts, they don't listen to their uncles, their grandmothers, or their grandfathers, or anybody. Unfortunately, children are raised these days to do just that by their parents. Don't ask me. Make up your own mind. I just want you to be happy. They're raised to be confused. They're raised to be off the path. They're raised to be lower consciousness people. That's my recent editorial coming out this week in Hinduism Today, indicating let's get back to the basics of raising children properly, giving them the proper guidance, because that is the duty of the parent, as well as it's the duty of the guru to raise the shishya properly through the years. The duty of the shishya to be responsive to the guru and not resistive. I was impressed at the Bangalore ashram how responsive everybody was to the gurus there. The guru looks at everybody, what now? What can I do? Guru speaks, everybody immediately responds. No resistance, I have something else to do. Or you already gave me 10 things to do. How can you possibly want me to stop now and do something else for you? Isn't there somebody else around here that can do it? None of that I saw there. Maybe everybody was just being on their good behavior because we were there, but it certainly took a lot of practice. They must have been practicing to be on their good behavior for about 5 years before we arrived. Wonderful responsiveness. And then the connection with this, because of this responsiveness, the connection between the shishya and the guru maintains a systematic growth. Maintains a systematic growth. And the spiritual life comes up within the individual, which breaks all routine and yet works within routine. Is beyond all intellectual and reasoning abilities, yet works within the intellect and through reason. Is unpredictable, yet predictable that it is consistently unpredictable. And that's the spiritual qualities that I see in all of you here at Kwa'arinam. And it's beginning to manifest in shishya all over the world. We saw that very clearly manifesting in Malaysia when we were there. The shishya is so bright and so responsive, and they're, in a sense, getting on their toes. What shall we do next? Just tell us and we'll figure out all the details. And it'll be done better than you can expect it. That is the spiritual quality. Without that quality in life, nothing really works right. People settle down to one day routine to job, begin the process of hate, jealousy, and revenge to their employer, to employees that work close to them, even nowadays to their mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters. This kind of competition goes on. In the Naninala Sutras, it's very clear that competitive games and competitive activity should not be stimulated within young people or old people also, because it keeps the lower qualities active. Everyone should be helpful to everyone, not compete with anyone. Do the very best you can and appreciate others doing the best that they can. So you'll all have a lot to think about when you finally read the Naninala Sutras and think that they came from deep within 2,200 years ago, at a time when Naninala sat with Isshishya to the Mular and said, go down to South India and teach about the glories of Lord Shiva, that he is within you and you are within him, he is the life of your life, and keep our philosophy moving along down there. I can see that they've gotten a little bit confused. We didn't have to go to the airport and buy a ticket and take a jet plane to fly to South India. He had a long and arduous, probably mostly on foot and bullock carts, journey. Many, many things could have happened to him along the way. He could have had many, many temptations. Saw the pretty girls bathing at the rivers. He could have been robbed. He could have been hit. He could have been killed. But because of his tapas and the good karma he accumulated by being very carefully obedient to his guru and the connection with his guru, the spiritual force carried him like on a magic carpet right down to where Chidambaram is today. And started his mission. And he fulfilled his mission. And his mission is being fulfilled today, right here, in this room. And will continue to be fulfilled 2,000 years from now, because nothing can stop the spiritual force. Death cannot stop it. The intellect cannot stop it. Once it begins, it continues. The instinct cannot stop it. Adversity cannot stop it. We look at the line of gurus all the way around the room, and then around, and then around, and then around, and then around, we can see ahead another 2,200 years. It's the same spiritual force, Shakti of Shiva, through the Navas. That are many Navas get born and born again as Navas to move things along, and when things aren't going very well, more Navas come to put a spiritual force into the world, such as Hinduism today, which has united all the Hindus of the world, educated all the Hindus of the world so they can talk in one voice to one another and look at karma, dharma, reincarnation, Vedas and agamas and all these wonderful things that we're putting in the newspaper in the same way. Hindus now can speak about Hinduism and understand one another in Asia, England, throughout the continent of Europe and Africa, the United States, Canada, South America, and have fun and appreciation for the very great religion, which is put forth in Hinduism today in a very simple, non-sectarian way. Just all the basic principles, one way or another. All the work of the mysterious novice. So if you ever get discouraged and wonder about the path, remember that there are three parts of Hinduism that will keep you on the path. The guru, temple, and the scriptures. Go to the temple, strengthen your relationship with the guru, and begin studying the scriptures. Discouragement will go away and courage will come. Dark hours will go and the bright hours will come. Problems will bend down as the intelligent that comes from the spiritual force begins to come up. This is the way of the mysterious novice who don't follow the way of words. Novices don't have any hype. Hype is something to sell. We're the only organization that is not beating a drum or selling a mantra or selling a seminar or selling a promise. We just are who we are and doing what we're doing. And if anyone comes along, that's our karma at that point in time, and we do the very best that we can. The facility that we have. We don't sell healing. We make no promises. Novices do their job on a very broad scale and pay attention to every small detail, both at the same time. And that's the little bit of the spiritual force that has come from Sage Yoga Swami, Shalaka Guru, Kadai Swami, mysterious Rishi, and those that preceded him to Tirumalar, and Nandinala. And those that preceded him, and those that preceded him, those that preceded him, as long as people walked on this planet. Three pillars of our great religion. Sadgurus, Shiva temples, Buddha temples, Ganesha temples, all the temples and all the scriptures. But it's the spiritual force of the guru that makes it all come to life in the individual. Would we all be sitting here today if when I went to the Jaffna Peninsula to find my guru, and he wasn't there. And I just went to a few temples for a while and came back to the United States. We wouldn't all be sitting here today. The temples don't give you that kind of spiritual force. Scriptures don't kind of give you that spiritual force. It's only the Sadhguru that gives you that sustaining spiritual force that makes life on this planet worthwhile. It gives you the ability to prevail all challenges and make a lasting difference, not only in yourself, in the lives of others. And now we're all working together to bring Hinduism, most especially Saivism, into the 21st century. Into the 21st century. And it's going to take all of our energies, collectively, to make that next big step into the 21st century. Because there'll be many changes in the world. People are changing. The world is changing. And it's our job to bring the best of tradition into the 21st century. Clarity of thought. And most importantly, the spirit that goes along with it. Spirit translates to ordinary language would be I want to do my hatha yoga. I want to get up in the morning and meditate. The lack of spirit is I have to do my hatha yoga. Oh, do I really have to? Maybe I won't get up and meditate. That's the instinctive mind talking. That's not the superconscious mind talking. That's the difference with the spirit. I want to get spiritual force. Do I have to, or I should? That's the instinctive intellectual force. That's capturing this talk today in bringing it down to earth as far as I can bring it down. So I was sitting here thinking about our wonderful gurus and what they said and what they didn't say. And if you look, you find out you don't know what some of them said, what they didn't say, but what they did. That's the important thing. How did they do it? Continuity of spiritual force. One thread, and then another thread. One fiber, and another fiber, and another fiber. Until a rope built up stronger than any humans can pull apart. Bands of steel. That's another way. Spiritual force. Om Namah Shivaya. Well, this beautiful puja, you give me the booty, we'll give the booty to.